This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. You know, it's funny. I feel like differently on a holiday weekend where I want to do like big time, big picture sports debates and arguments. I don't know why. Maybe it's because, Kevin Durant versus the media. What do you want me to say? I've talked about it 1,000 times. Or, could this player be going to this place? I've talked about it 1,000 times. But July's coming up. We're going to find out where these guys are going. That's when the craziness is going to pick up. I can't do it anymore. Want to talk about Drake? You can talk about Drake if you want. 855-212-4227. Drake, fine. But considering Kevin Durant, second team All-NBA, LeBron James, third team All-NBA, LeBron, maybe the best player in history, in my mind, the best player in history, third team All-NBA, Steph Curry, a chance to be a top five player in NBA history, he's on the All-NBA team, but seeing Durant second and LeBron third, it's just like, wow, the league's talent is absurd. You combine that with the explosion of the three-point shot, the evolution of the game, the evolution of athletes, and I think you're looking at the best era of basketball players we've ever seen. Agree or disagree? 855-212-4227, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news, there's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's go to Adam in Knoxville, Tennessee. Adam, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Good morning.
What up?
I think you're wrong. I think a lot of it has to do with the rule changes. If you look at how much less physical players are allowed to be than they were 15 and 20 years ago, if you still had the same rule, the same rules that you had in the 80s and the 90s, there's no way these guys are as prolific scorers as they are today, because they won't be able to, they're not going to have as much room because people are going to be way more defensive minded.
Well, I would much rather play against the defenses of those, or I'd much rather play in those eras to try and stop those guys. Yes, I guess. But at the same time, you're not talking about the kind of defense you have to play now. Like, it was much easier to play defense then. You were stuck to your man, right? So let's take the 1990s, for instance, and say you're playing against the New York Knicks, and the Knicks come down the court and they dump it to Patrick Ewing in the post. So Patrick Ewing's man's got Patrick Ewing. Maybe you send the double team. You just kind of stick with your man. You don't have to worry about flying out behind every single screen, getting to every single player on the court, because the other team has five guys who can all shoot it on the court at the same time, and they're going to shoot three times as many threes as the teams from that point in time shot. So I think the game has evolved in a way that it's made it a more effective game.
I agree with you that the game has evolved, but I think whichever way, if guys nowadays were playing then, they wouldn't be as effective. But I think if guys back then were playing now, they may not be as prolific, but I think they would be able to adjust and they would be.
I think the all-time great players
than what they were.
I think the all-time great players would be able to adjust, but there were a lot of players who played in that era who I don't think could play in today's era because they were too one-dimensional. They were too specialized in their skill set. And nowadays, you really can't be specialized in your skill set. If you're a big man, almost, you have to be able to shoot, right? Like, and you have to be able to dribble. You have to be able to switch defensively. So I think skilled players all around are being valued at a higher level. Versatile players, I guess, is the word.
I agree with you to a certain extent, but I don't think the gap is as great as it's made out to be, I guess.
Like those Pacers teams that were really good, the Davis brothers, very good players at that, could would Dale Davis and Antonio Davis thrive in today's NBA?
No, I mean, they wouldn't thrive, but they wouldn't. I don't think they'd be bums either.
I don't know. I don't know if they'd be able to see the court. You know, like, they can't shoot the ball. You have to be able to shoot the ball from range. You have to be able to guard smalls and all that stuff.
How is what's his name on Philly that graduated from LSU?
Ben Simmons? Well, first of all, yeah, that's a thing that gets brought up a lot as a huge weakness for Ben Simmons, that he can't shoot. But Ben Simmons is a supremely talented player. You're talking about a difference in talent level between him and role players from that era. You know, Ben Simmons is super talented. He's also, how tall is big Ben Simmons? 6'8" and playing point guard at times. I mean, and he's a good example. He's a guy who could play. He's 6'10", Ben Simmons. He could play center and point guard. How many guys from a different era could play center and point guard? Magic Johnson notably did it in one game, and he celebrated for it, rightfully so. But you got a bunch of guys now who can play multiple positions. I mean, positionless basketball is a phrase for a reason. And I think it's another argument that you're seeing the best era of talent the NBA's ever seen. 855-212-4227. Isaac in Dallas. Isaac, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Isaac?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you today?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. Hey, man, I want to bring up something. Full context, I'm 25 years old. I'm pretty much a young buck. Haven't seen too much basketball.
Yeah.
But I want to see, why do you think one of the best players all time that I believe can play in any era doesn't get his fair due? And that is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, you look at his stats, number one all-time in points, 19 All-Star games, just as many rings as Jordan. But then if you take the full body of work, including college basketball, he's got 3 championships there, 3 MVPs in college. I mean, the dude was a stud, can shoot, got buckets, blocked, rebound, steals, assisted too, and he's always overlooked. He's not up there with the Jordans when he's better, I believe. He's not up there with LeBron when he's better, I believe. And I believe he's a big man that could shoot and play in today's game. So I just want to get your take on that. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it.
I think there's a couple reasons for that. One is most people who are in these conversations, both from the talent that you see on TV and the radio and a lot of the callers, are not old enough to have seen a lot of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's career. You know, I did not have a chance to watch his career much in real time, other than him as an older guy and me as a very, very young fan. So, you know, his career ended before 1990. So I was, 8 years old when he retired. So I'm almost 40 now. So, like, you're talking about it being a lot of time that has passed since then. And the other is that big men always seem to get separated in these conversations. You know, to me, the 4 best players I've seen with my own eyes at the peak of their powers in order of appearance are Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, LeBron James, and Steph Curry. So I'm not separating the big man. Like, Shaq was as dominant as almost anybody. But sometimes in these conversations, it does work that way, where you're arguing Shaq and Duncan and Kareem and Chamberlain against one another and not against Michael Jordan and LeBron James. Tony in Indianapolis. Tony, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Tony?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I was just, I coach AAU basketball in Indianapolis, and I just was having this conversation yesterday with my kids, and they were asking about the guards in the 80s and 90s, and I was like, Michael Jordan, Allen Iverson, you know, Gary Payton. I named a few of those guys, but I also explained to them that the guys in this era wouldn't be able to get their shots off as easy with hand-checking rules. If a guy with big hands puts his hands on you, you and I are close to the same age. I'm 42. You remember when guys could hand check you. They can guide you where they want to go. If they're a strong guy with big hands, they're going to let you go where, you know, and Gary Payton picks Steph Curry up at half court now. I don't care what kind of range he's got. If that guy's got big hands on him, eventually it wears you down. Your legs, jump shots all come from your legs. Not only that, with the big men being skilled in the paint like they were back then, what big men, I mean, I'm in Indianapolis. Miles Turner can't guard Shaq, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, none of those guys, because they know they have post moves. Kevin McHale would eat these guys up. Nowadays.
But the post up has been, you know, kind of proven as an inefficient play. You know,
it's only inefficient when you don't have skilled players.
Well, no, the data has kind of borne out that it was not an efficient way to. I mean, think about it logically. You're not even facing what you're trying to score in.
and I understand what you're saying, but I'm also here where Reggie Miller was king. Well, you adjust the game. Those sure. three-point shooters are only as effective because the game rules have changed.
That's not true because, I mean, Steph Curry, regardless of where the rules are, look where he's shooting the ball from. I mean, yes, the rule changes are a part of it, both ways. I mean, the hand check is a valid point, but I feel like it's being oversold as, like, some ultimate stopper.
It's
okay. But also think about this. In the era that you're referencing, you either had to I'll use LeBron as an example. You either had to man cover or send a hard double. Do you know how badly LeBron would destroy those defenses? He would destroy them.
He would destroy them the same way Magic did.
He would destroy them. I mean, I think of LeBron's stat lines would be astronomical because if you're hard doubling him, he's such a great passer that his teammates are going to get open shots the whole game. And if you're single covering him, you're never going to be able to stop him. Nowadays, you're allowed to play quasi-zone defenses where you could play like the Warriors do, where you have one guy on him, say it's Andre Iguodala, who's guarding him, and then Draymond Green is hedging over, so he's really being guarded by 1.5 guys. You could not do that back in the day.
But my devil's advocate point is the same way you're saying that you stick Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan or Allen Iverson on the court with shooters. Now when you play that zone defense, those shooters are getting open shots because Mike gets to the basket so easy. Allen Iverson gets to the basket so easy.
But see, now I'm daring Allen Iverson to shoot. Could Allen Iverson shoot the ball?
You don't have to dare him because you can't stop him because you can't hand check him anymore.
Yeah, but we see plenty of there's a lot of quick guards in the league nowadays who are
they're not as quick as Allen Iverson.
Yeah, roughly as quick. There's guys that are Kyrie Irving.
That's why he gets to the basket whenever he wants.
But he can shoot the ball better.
He's not as good of a
scorer. But he can shoot the ball better.
What's that?
Kyrie Irving is as good a scorer as Allen Iverson.
Oh, were you not watching, bud?
I'm watching plenty. I mean, look at the – Kyrie Irving
– They doubled Allen, and he's shorter than Kyrie and smaller. They doubled him all the time.
Look, Allen Iverson is a great player, super tough player, and certainly that. But there are – there are reasons if you wanted to say that he was the little man Carmelo Anthony in certain ways, right?
It was inefficient because you could play defense.
But you could play defense now. You could play smarter defense now than you could then.
No, they don't play defense now.
They do play defense now. The offense is just, you have to guard.
Think they make such a big deal of Kawhi Leonard? Because he plays both ends.
Sure, but there are plenty of guys who play both ends.
Talk about
what Allen Iverson did. Hold on a second. What Allen Iverson did in 2001 was incredible. When there was the only game the Lakers lost that year, right? The game one of the finals. When he stepped over Tyronn Lue. But if you look at that Sixers team for a second, you know how much easier it was to guard that Sixers team than almost any NBA team in the league now? You know, they had guys on the court like Eric Snow, who could not score.
Those guys were also in your jersey at half court.
Sure, but I don't care if they can't score. You put a team like that on the floor now, you are toast. You are toast because you have to have five live bodies. You have to have five guys. Otherwise,
those guys are going to have their hands on you.
Well, you talk about Giannis out. I don't care about hands.
Erasing everything in the paint.
The hand check is not the hand check is not the infinity gauntlet. Like the idea that like a hand check is going to stop some of these guys is ridiculous.
The physicality of the game is the infinity gauntlet.
No,
the whole physicality of the game.
But yes,
because it wasn't called.
But you didn't have to guard guys outside the square footage of the court was reduced. You only have a guard in a certain area. It was like you were guarding guys in an elevator.
Guess what? The Milwaukee series, they only guard in a certain area.
Yeah,
and
because Giannis.
So your point is being proven wrong.
Giannis, who might be shooting.
If I give you 10 shots at the three-point line, I don't care who you are. You're not going to shoot as high a percentage as Shaq's going to shoot by the basket.
Yes, but you don't have to because 33% from three is worth 50% from two. 855-212-4227. At Robin Lundberg on Twitter. Is this the best era of basketball we've ever seen? It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm looking at my screen here, and it says Phil from Birmingham, Alabama wants to come on the show, and the topic is listed as the last caller was right, you are wrong. What I've been saying is this is clearly the most talented era in NBA history. 855-212-4227. Phil in Alabama, why am I wrong? What's up, Phil?
Nothing much. How you doing? Great show, man.
Thank you.
Hey, I agree with the last caller. You know, that's the only comment I want to make. I think he sees it like I see it.
You agree in what sense?
I think you were wrong.
What am I wrong about?
When he was talking about Allen Iverson and and you were saying Kyrie Irving's a better shooter and
he is.
Stuff like that. And the hand check, the physicality of a big man, the post game.
The hand check thing cracks me up. You guys think hand check would do anything to these guys? Nothing. LeBron James, Kevin
down,
Durant,
man.
It doesn't wear. I mean, like they want to. The hand check, they would use it to their advantage. They turn hand checks into fouls. You know, you think you're going to try? Go ahead and try and hand check James Harden, see how quickly he turns that into a foul.
Scottie Pippen will be all over.
Well, Scottie Pippen was a great defensive player. I mean, Scottie Pippen, I have no doubt, would you know, be able to guard people effectively. But again, these guys did not. Think about the way you had to play defense. You didn't have to guard. You didn't have to run as much as you have to now. You were sticking to your man. A lot of the guys on the court were non-shooters. You know, like nowadays, you don't have to fight your way through screens the way you do now, or close out on every play the way you do now. Like what you're asked to do defensively is so much more strenuous than what you were asked to do back then.
I don't agree with you. I wish they could, you know, in the past be in their prime and in the present be in their prime and let them compete together. I think they would slaughter these guys these days.
I think they would get blown out of the gym. I just don't think you can compete with the way that the 3-point shot has become such a potent weapon for so many players, and the volume with which it's shot at it's just crazy compared to, you know, let me try and find a good example right now as we're talking in real time. I will look at the, where are we, 2018-19 NBA Finals coming up. So let's look at the 2018 NBA Finals against the, pick a year, Brian, for me.
1976.
Well, that's too early. Pick a 90s kind of year.
1992
NBA Finals. All right, let me see if I can pull up the box scores really quickly. I've got the 1992 NBA Finals. And I've got the 2018 NBA Finals. So you have the 2018, it's the Cavs and the Warriors. And 1992, it's the Blazers and the Bulls. The Chicago Bulls in that NBA Finals, who they won, they attempted 65 three-pointers. They hit 25 three-pointers in that series. The Golden State Warriors attempted 136 threes. And hit 51 threes. And that was a 5-game series versus what was the Blazers and the Bulls, a 6-game series. So in one fewer game, they hit twice as many threes. Twice as many. Attempted 136 they attempted compared to 65. And then let's look at the losing team, just out of curiosity. The Portland Trail Blazers in that series attempted 52 threes, and they hit 10 of them. 10 of 52, not so good. The Cleveland Cavaliers in that series against the Warriors. Where's their team stats here? Sorry, I'm trying to do this in real time. The Cavs took 122 threes and hit 36. So the Cavs hit almost 4 times as many threes as the Blazers did in that series. That's just difficult to deal with. And it just, I mean, like, and it's not a punishment to the errors from before, but when you think about what you have to do, when you think about, look at the Hamptons Five, for instance, like as the prototypical death lineup, as it was called before Kevin Durant got there. Think about what you have to guard when you're guarding that. Draymond Green can put the ball on the floor. Draymond Green's not a shooter, but if you leave him open from three, there's going to be some games where he knocks those down. Same with Andre Iguodala, who also was in his heyday an all-star, and is not an incompetent scorer. He's not going to light you up, but he can score some points. Klay Thompson, second best shooter who ever lived. Steph Curry, best shooter who ever lived. And I think at peak of his powers, the best point guard who ever lived. And then Kevin Durant, a 7-footer who can put it on the floor and pull up. And those guys can switch everything defensively. And they make you have to put a team out there that can switch everything defensively, or else you're going to be cooked, because if you put a big man out on the floor that can't switch, they're going to bomb threes on your dome. That's what's going to happen.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show on CBS Sports Radio. Going to ask you if you still care about home runs at 855-212-4227. I'll tell you why and get to that in just a second. But first, I'll let Bump in Detroit, Michigan, have the final word on the NBA conversation we were having. Bump, you're up on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, I just have something to say about that, what you were saying about Steph Curry will be able to do whatever he wanted to do against the old-school defenses.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
He would destroy those defenses. Just destroy them.
Yeah, let me tell you what would happen if he would ever have, if he ever had to experience a Kevin McHale, Kurt Rambis down through the middle.
Can I tell you something? You want to talk about experiencing a Kurt Rambis or Kevin McHale clothesline? Tell me this: how would Kurt Rambis fare in a switch against Steph Curry on the perimeter? What would happen to him? Because that's going to happen. The screen's going to be set, and he's going to have to get out on either they're going to be totally scrambling.
I'm talking about with the old school rules.
I'm talking about any rules. You can make up the rules if you want. How would Kurt Rambis fare on a switch against Steph Curry if he had to pick him up outside? What's going to happen? What's going to happen to Kurt Rambis?
He wouldn't do good.
No, he would not do good.
I admit that.
He would be vanquished.
No, but what would happen to
Kevin McHale?
What would happen if Gary Payton picked him up out there?
Gary Payton, Steph Curry could score against anybody.
No. Every time.
Yeah, he'd get ripped every time. Yeah, I mean, who do you think Steph Curry is?
I mean,
he can handle the ball as well as anyone Gary Payton ever played with.
He would have made a jump shot. He would have came down on one of them foot accidentally, and he would have been injured, so he wouldn't have been able to play.
Go back and watch clips of these guys. The idea that they're so much more physical. The watch clips, the defense.
Yeah, he didn't grow up.
The defense was easier to score against then. It was easier. They weren't as good. The players were not as athletic. They could not move as quickly.
They were tougher. They don't make them as tough as they used to.
Just because every now and again.
He'd be ready to get on Twitter and
just because every now and again somebody would get knocked to the floor does not make the defense better overall.
It would make the game change. It would make them think twice about coming down through the lane.
You make them look silly when they're trying to guard on the perimeter. You wouldn't even have to worry about coming in the lane because you'd be blown by them. There'd be nobody in the lane.
Well, they took all that out.
They took what out?
They took all the defense out.
They didn't take the defense out. Yes, they. You can, if you want to make a case that they should let them be more physical. Fine, they did remove some of that from the game. I even have a problem with some of the whistles, especially with some of the way jump shooting is officiated. They did not take defense out. Throwing a forearm into someone is not defense. They did not take defense out of the game. The rules actually got changed. Michael Jordan said he would not have had the career that he had if he had to play under today's rules. He said that. Because you could have zoned up on him, it would have made it more difficult for him in many instances. Now, Michael Jordan is an all-time great player. I believe that Michael Jordan would have adapted and evolved. He would have been a better three-point. Because Michael Jordan was not a good three-point shooter. He had one year where he was a pretty good three-point shooter, and that was the year that they moved the three-point line in. They changed it. Now we're talking about moving it further away. They moved it in to help them score because they weren't scoring enough points. So they wanted to incentivize more action in the game. They wanted to incentivize more scoring. That is true, a more wide-open game because you were getting – you remember that Tayshaun Prince block on Reggie Miller when that happened, that game was 69-67 at the end of that game. So they were getting ugly games like that. So, they did want to open it up. But also, a lot of things happened. You had the analytics revolution. You had players getting better. You had, people realized the value in some of the way the game is played now when it wasn't played that way before. You would have got benched. A lot of the shots Steph Curry takes, he would have got benched for back in the day. And now you realize they're super effective. And defenses now have much more strain on them. It's much more difficult. I really, I don't even say that for effect. I think you see some of these guys going up against the old school defenses that people talk about. They would destroy them. It would be a massacre. Just a massacre, because they wouldn't be prepared to guard these guys. They didn't have to do that. You were guarding within a smaller space. Speaking of era conversations, what about the home run? What about the home run? I saw the other day, I think it was the Twins. They hit 8 home runs in a game or something like that. And at another job, we had a production meeting. We were talking about whether anybody cared, and nobody seemed to care that they hit 8 home runs in a game. And there have been some home run marks set. I know a couple guys earlier in the year, Bellinger and Yelich, had gotten to a point where they did the most by May 1st, right? The most RBIs, most home runs, whatever. Point is, there were marks being set. And when I was a kid, the home run was like everything. I would be out in the front yard. We'd play home run derby. That's what we would play. Not baseball. We'd play home run derby. And Ken Griffey Jr., would go on that. What was the streak that Griffey had with consecutive? Brian, you know this. Consecutive games with he had a run there where he was taking the ball out of the park, and that was right before the Bonds McGuire Sosa explosion. Really, it started with McGuire and Sosa, and then it was Bonds, and you were getting the live updates. It was 8 straight games Griffey hit home run. I remember that being a huge thing when I was a kid. And you would get the live cut-ins to Sosa and McGuire and Bonds, and it's like, whoa, look at these home runs. And now you see home runs being hit at a record pace in baseball, and no one cares. No one cares. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that the hallowed marks got destroyed. Because of the steroid era, the PED era, like the Roger Maris number, that was the number. Like, oh, no one, 61. And then, 61 fell. And you had guys hitting 50, 60 home runs every year. So the hallowed numbers fell, and the frequency of seeing these home runs made people numb to it, and also people realized the mark was set by enhanced guys, and there's really no way for the normal person to get there. Because if anyone ever gets to those numbers again, the first thing you're going to suspect is that they're on the juice. And then the other thing I think that has happened is the sport has become so feast or famine. I mean, this is a way that some of the advancements, baseball was always the easiest sport to analyze by statistics because it's a series of isolated events. We talk about analytics movements in other sports, and certainly it's happened in basketball. It's one of the reasons for the three-point shot. But in basketball, there's no way to, they're trying to measure everything, but it's hard to measure pick-and-roll coverage and chemistry and who's the best playing with whom and who has the best, synergy on a lob, and you know what I'm saying. Defensive effort, energy, all that stuff isn't possible to properly quantify. In baseball, there are factors that go beyond the numbers, but the numbers give you a very good idea of what's going on because there's such a huge sample size. There are so many at-bats in a season, so many plate appearances, so many that the numbers are going to tell you pretty much the whole story when it's all done, because each thing that happens is also an isolated event. It's not as if what one guy is doing is impacting what the next guy is doing. maybe indirectly. You know, maybe you have one guy in the lineup who's protecting the next guy in the lineup, or you're pitching around one guy, or you're more likely to not try to give one guy a meaty pitch because the next guy's not as good. All that stuff is subtle. Or, you know, you're playing defense a certain way versus one guy and not another. There's subtle stuff. But for the most part, what one player is doing is not impacting what the other players are doing in baseball. So the numbers, it would make sense that that was the sport that first had that revolution. And as a result, you found what the market inefficiencies were. That was what Moneyball was all about. And therefore, Moneyball wasn't about on base percentage. It was about an undervalued thing that they identified, which was the on base percentage at that time. And now that of course has become sort of the gospel. And you see pitchers are better than ever. Hitters are more patient than ever. And hitters have been instructed that a home run has a ton of value, right? So they're swinging for everything, or they're sort of swinging for nothing, because obviously the best outcome of any at bat is a home run. I used to hear people say this team hits too many home runs, or you got to do more small ball and all that stuff. The best outcome of any at bat is a home run. That is the best possible outcome. So you see guys who are trying to be patient because they want to get on base, but they're also swinging for the fences. And that leads to higher counts. That leads to a lot of strikeouts. Also leads to a lot of home runs. It leads to a lot fewer balls put into play. So I'll be one of those old-timey guys right now and say, you need more small ball. At least from an entertainment standpoint, you do. Because it's feast or famine. You know, so many guys are so good at pitching the ball that, you know, random run-of-the-mill reliever is excellent. So they're getting a lot of strikeouts, and the hitters are so good and so patient, they're getting a lot of home runs, but there's not much in between. So when you consider the steroid era and the fact that the marks, the holy grail of baseball, fell, which were really the things that led people to discuss the sport the most, they fell, and they really can't be attained again. Those type of marks will not be attained again, at least not without the suspicion that whoever's attaining them is cheating. And the fact that in the current time, the at-bats are so often either home run or strikeout, feast or famine, I think it's made people kind of numb to the home run overall. See so many of them. And it's either that or the guy's going down swinging. There's so much less action in the field of play. You know, so much less attempted stolen bases or guys trying to beat out the ball that was hit or trying to turn a single into a double. You know, stuff like that. Great plays in the field. Shortstop diving to stop the ball, make the throw to first. Center fielder, you know, running, chasing down the fly ball and making the catch on the warning track. All that stuff is lessened. So I think what was the play in baseball, the home run, that was like when I was a kid, that was it. That was it. That's what you wanted to see, home run, home run, home run, home run. I think people have kind of become numb to it. Are you numb to the home run? Do you care about home runs anymore? Again, record rate. They're hitting home runs right now more than they ever have before. Period. Never. And that this is like a year-by-year thing. Every year it seems like that rate is going up, and now you're at a record rate. Christian Yelich has 20 home runs right now. He's got 20 home runs right now.
Yeah, the Twins right now are on pace to crush. The Yankees set the season record last year. It was 267, and right now the Twins are on pace for 327.
So the Yankees set the record for most home runs by a team last year. Nobody really cares. And now the Twins might break that, likely will break that record. Nobody cares. Bellinger, how many home runs does he have this year? 18. Yelich has 20. Like, and it seems like nobody cares. Do you care about the home run, or are you numb to the home run? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. 4227, because I do feel like at a different time period, that would be a big deal. That would be like, can you believe what's going on with the Minnesota Twins? All these home runs. Now it's like, hey, did you know that the Minnesota, because I did not know that. I knew that they hit 8 home runs in a game the other night. What was that, Thursday night? But I did not know they were on pace to break the all-time record. I didn't know that.
They've actually done it twice this year, 8 home runs in a game. And I think a major problem with this is there's not one singular player that's dominating the home run race. Like, it's not like someone's chasing the 70, 75 home run race. That's not a thing anymore. It's a bunch of guys hitting 20. That's the problem. There's no singular guy that's going to hit 80. If Christian Yelich continues this and hits 80 home runs this year, I think it'll be a story if he's breaking 61 again.
If someone's going after 61 or Bonds, I mean, Bonds has the record. Whether people like it or not, the record is how many Barry Bonds hit. You know that, and you know it's funny. You don't even know I don't even know that number, 73, right? I don't know that number offhand because it's not the same. It's not valued the same as the 61 that Maris hit.
Yeah, I mean, how many guys last year hit 50 home runs? 4. So like the league, there's not a lot of guys hitting a mass amount of home runs. It's just everyone's hitting 20 now. There's not. You used to have in the 90s. There were guys. Did 3 guys in your team would have 20 home runs and it'd be a big deal. Now there's 8 guys in your roster that have 20 home runs.
And that's why I think it's twofold. I think what happened to the home run mark in the PED era lessened what that meant, and we don't think another guy can get there. And then what's happened from the league-wide perspective, where you're getting either home runs or strikeouts, has made the home run feel less special because there's nothing in between that. You're seeing it, and then when you're not seeing it, you're not seeing anything else except for a guy being retired. Have we become numb to the home run? Do you care about home runs anymore? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. I will get to you next. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.